Here we go. All right, so we're recording. So today we're going to be talking about fibromyalgia, and I will be the first to admit it is not an area I've worked with that much. You know, I've dealt with it some, mainly when I had my clinic and I was doing a lot of weight loss, and then people would say, oh, by the way, I have this, and all I would do would because they were in the weight loss protocol, they were getting a lot of stress management, and it's like, I know fibromyalgia and IBS, stress is a big, exacerbates the symptoms a lot. So if you can just lower the stress, the symptoms, I'm not saying they go away, but they subside somewhat. Kind of like Billy would know, and Albert, post-traumatic stress, if you lower the general stress level, the symptomology of those things get better. But I would usually try to send them to somebody that's what they do more of. You know, so that's my take. I would just, you know, but I want to hear what other people, if you worked with it, what have you done? You know, I always like to hear what works. Have you tried something that didn't work? You know, I know when I go to psych conventions and they have the meetings, sometimes I like hearing when guys talk about what they tried and didn't work. So they tried something else. So who, okay, jump in, Miss Lori.
Here's something interesting. I'm an MD, but I've learned about all the alternative forms of medicine, not acupuncture, but acupressure and tapping. And I'm just beginning my hypnosis journey. But what is said in homeopathy is something will manifest externally, and then if it's not addressed, because it starts off as a spiritual, emotional, mental issue, it will then, so if topical steroids are used and topicals are used, it then goes inside, and what happens is the rash turns into asthma, and then if you start treating the asthma, it internalizes even more. So for example, now you know that Louise Hay has discussed, you can heal your life. And the body is simply a metaphor for what's going on in one's life. You have Charles Curtis, who also says that. So I had a rear-ended car accident 4 years ago, low back pain from it, first time I've ever had pain. You know, Advil has relieved everything else in the past. And I took hypnosis and a tapping class simultaneously. And during that summer, I tapped the pain out of my lower back pretty much. So tapping, of course, is going to be an integral part. And that is acupuncture or pressure without increasing the voltage. Then all of a sudden, over the course of the last 3 years, that lower back pain has radiated into my left hip, and I am at the point where it's affecting my lifestyle. So it's time to get a new hip. So I decided to go for prolotherapy, which is alternative, and it's recombinant DNA stuff and germ cell stuff. So, and they put it in and they try to rebuild the cartilage and the joint and the ligaments. And I don't know if it's working, but the weird thing is he goes right into the joint and injects with this therapy. It cost me $4,000, cost my accountant $3,000, but that's 1/10, 1/20th the price of a joint, right? So then the pain starts radiating all around the joint. It's almost like it's still trying to hide. It goes from the back where there's ligaments in the back to the front where there's ligaments in the front to the side. It's like where there are ligaments and tendons, it remanifests. And so I tell the PA today when I go for laser treatments, I said, this pain is radiating around. She says it moves around. And I think the fibromyalgia patients are the same. Their pain moves around and remanifests, but it's moving out. So I'm just in the process of learning this myself, and she suggested hypnosis, and I said, oh, good idea. So I'm going to start the self-hypnosis also. But I have a feeling that that probably mimics the fibromyalgia a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Not cool, but cool.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Who else? Has anybody worked with fibromyalgia in particular? That one person would, they're not here yet, but if they show up, who works with it a lot?
I've had only one or two kind of experiences with people with fibromyalgia. I do a combination of techniques and let them know. I mean, sometimes they're expecting it's going to go away, and it's like, well, no, it's just how to minimize or the impact or how to manage it is the start, right? So their expectations are there. But it's combining a transformative mindfulness technique, which is like, and NLP or hypnosis type techniques, where you're getting them into a, getting them to relax and then go inside, like do the body scan, figure out where it is, and then, you know, what's the color, what does it look like, how old is it, how new is it, and almost then moving out and looking back in to see how they can, you know, what's it telling you, is it telling you what it needs, kind of thing. And so like doing that combination sometimes helps them understand it more, and so when they feel it, they can step outside and maybe actually help themselves reduce the pain. Make it smaller, how to manage it.
Yeah.
Almost giving the pain some wisdom, right?
Oh yeah, trying to see what it's saying.
What's it telling you? Where is it? How is it? How big is it? How small is it? Is it red? Like doing almost that submodality kind of thing with it, just to understand. Right?
Now I'm having a flashback, and not the good kind with the dancing unicorns. I was at a conference. It was at the Guild, and it was when they were still in Nashua, New Hampshire. So that had to be 15, 16 years ago, something like that. And there was a seminar, and it was one of the coolest, and I can't think of the guy, I think he's passed now, but he did ideomotor signals when he was working with chronic pain. And I remember mentioning fibromyalgia, IBS, and that, because you didn't want, according to him, and I gotta think of his name, he was also, I think he was a master level social worker, but his thought was, by using ideomotor, he didn't want the person to consciously try to decode what was going on. You know, and he did a really, it was interesting. I'm like, this was pretty cool. And somebody had chronic back pain from an accident that Lori made me think of that. And so he brought him up and he did the whole thing, and I remember I was pretty impressed at the time, and I don't use ideomotor signals that much, but it's kind of like in the six-step reframe from the classical NLP world, and in fact that's kind of what he did. He was reframing it. What is this kind of what Lori just? What is this like, Lori? What is this pain telling you? What is it protecting you from? His big thing, I remember, was what is it protecting you from? You know, what is it protecting you from? So anyway, that's just I just came to me, and I'll think of the guy's name probably in the middle of the night. My eyes will pop open and I'll go, so-and-so. So let me ask you, what do you think, Mr. Billy?
Good doctor. I haven't worked with fibromyalgia at all. And I've only, you know, being in the Navy, didn't run across many people, a couple of Navy spouses or relatives that had fibromyalgia, or that was their formal diagnosis. And it seemed very debilitating. But I've never worked with it. That's one of the reasons why I was hoping you rescheduled this event, because I was looking forward to hearing more about it.
Okay. Did you work much with IBS?
Again, only with a couple spouses. If you really have IBS, you're not going to be considered fit for duty. Along with that, I think one Navy spouse that I worked with had Crohn's disease.
Okay.
And that was just addressing the my understanding at the time was addressing the symptoms and trying to make sure that nothing triggered one of the bouts. But that now is hazard to say that those clients didn't charge them very much. Those are probably 12, 15 years ago. The Crohn's disease was only about 12 years ago, but the IBS spouses were about 15.
Don Rice.
Oh.
The guy's name was Don Rice. He lived in Arizona. So, totally irrelevant information, but it was, I always try to give credit where it was. All right. What about Miss Carolyn? Have you worked with fibromyalgia?
You know, I have not seen someone, I haven't had anyone come in with that diagnosis, but I can tell you, I was diagnosed with fibromyalgia 20 years ago in 2000, in the year 2000. So I know personally how I control it, and what triggers it for me is stress. And it first reared its ugly head when my dad went in for a triple bypass surgery, and he was 80 years old at the time. And, you know, I was very worried about him and having to take care of my mom. That triggered it. I got that diagnosis. When I was first diagnosed, I was completely debilitated. They talk about chronic fatigue. I had never known what it was like to literally not be able to lift your head off the pillow, being that weak. So I've seen it at its worst. Distraction, like chronic pain, which is what it is, but it migrates around the body. And what a lot of people find is, you know, 1 week it's this complaint and the next week it's in your joints or it's in your muscles. And sometimes it's really hard to localize where the pain's coming from because it's neurological. And I think I've heard it categorized as an autoimmune issue where the nerves become overly sensitive. And there was a time you could not touch my skin. Because it would feel like it was on fire. It's horribly painful when it flares, but it can be controlled. And distraction, activity, controlling your stress. And so that's where I started really specializing in stress management and pain-related issues. And it was driven from, you know, what was happening to me. So I've always used myself as a guinea pig, hence that video. But no one has come in, and, you know, who knows if they may have it and they don't even realize it. A lot of doctors, especially 20 years ago, thought it was a psychosomatic condition. And, you know, women were being belittled and being told, you know, you're overly sensitive, or, you know, have a glass of wine.
It's just menopause.
Yeah. Go home and have a bagel. But, you know, I was lucky. I had a doctor who at least was sensitive enough to test me. And it was indeed a reality, which made me feel validated. And I've since, you know, gotten it under control. And I still have really nasty flare-ups. At least I know now how to kind of rein it back in. And meditation is the first thing I would recommend to someone who comes in with that diagnosis, because that is the best way to calm the mind, center yourself, and really from within start thinking about that healing and getting that healing going. So meditation is a huge help. Self-hypnosis, same thing, really. And it is very effective, very effective. They say exercise helps too. For me, not so much. And that may be because I push myself beyond my limits. So I find I have to rein myself in when I do start to exercise so I don't re-injure something that's, you know, already, as my doctor would say, very angry with me. But Lori brought up some really good points, and the prolotherapy does help. I've had it too. I've had the stem cell. Anything you can do that's a natural healing, even herbal, just helps to calm the body. And once you can calm the body, you can calm the mind. So.
Cool. Who else? How about Michelle? And don't say chocolate.
Hershey chocolate. Not just any chocolate, Hershey chocolate. So I haven't had any fibromyalgia clients. I have had clients with pain, and I do the tapping, also the submodalities, and I also do, and this is all in one session, I do the tapping, the submodality, and then a hypnosis meditation that they take home and listen to every day, you know, as many times as they want. And usually with the submodalities, they find some, you know, release and a less, you know, it lessens for them because, you know, they're experiencing it, you know, on that scale of 1 to 10. And then they get to a number and we go do it again somewhere else and get it down as low as we can. And then do the hypnosis meditation, and people who experience pain have all said that has helped. And they tell their, you know, they say they tell their friends. And yeah, I was like, well, why are they calling? Yeah. But they tell their friends, and the pain has really helped for them. I've had a woman who has a metal rod in her hip because I forget the large muscle or thing that goes, it's a band, some sort of band that goes down her leg. And she was in extreme pain. Now she has no pain, which I am so happy about. But I do that for pain, and I was just quickly looking at fibromyalgia and the sleep part of it. You know, we help people with sleep so we can, you know, since they are unable to sleep, you know, use our fancy techniques for sleep. It would be nice and interesting if maybe, like today, while we're all talking and brainstorming, if like we threw in what we think, because Caroline would know, but because I don't have any personal self experience with fibromyalgia, and Laurie would know what is the biggest component that you feel made the difference, and then go on that. Because Louise Hay and Dr. Curtis, Charlie Curtis, do say you can heal your life, you can heal disease. And it's true, because I was in a class with Charlie and a woman who had breast cancer, and she did what he said to do every single day, and the breast cancer went away. So, I mean, along with, you know, her doctor's treatment, but it went away, and she attributes it to hypnosis, meditation, tapping, affirmations, you know, the whole of that. That, so I think meditation and tapping and hypnosis would be the, and the submodalities. I mean, what do you think is the most important component? Anybody? or just all of it, depending on what happens at what time?
I think there isn't a singular most important component. I think whatever resonates most strongly with the person you're working with is what's going to work, and you do them a great service if you give them exposure to all. When you hit on something that they seem to resonate with, go with that and build on that. For me, Reiki also works really well. I'm very good at going inside myself and, you know, really focusing. And I worked with a gal who had non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And this was an interesting story because I had introduced her to Greg Braden and that 3-minute cure video. And the intense, intense visualization of seeing those cells do their work and boost her immunity. And she came to see me 2 weeks. She started with me 2 weeks before she started chemo. And they had already done, you know, a lot of the measurements of the tumor, the size and all that. And we started intense visualizations. And I'd done a ton of research on non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And she understood I'm not a doctor, you know, nothing like that. But I, you know, did as much very graphic visualization of how the, you know, which cells were killing the bad cells. And so I don't even remember the names of all the cells right now. But by the time 2 weeks later, she had started chemo, the doctor did a double take. When he remeasured the tumor again, it had already started to shrink. That's the power of the human spirit. And, so for me, it's meditation. I can get my immune system going when I really, Dr. Joe Dispenza talks about that too. And it's possible, but it's really hard. We're in this field. We know what we can do. We know the strength we have at our fingertips. So the trick really is, I think, equally as much about convincing your client that they have this power as much as it is the technique itself.
That's awesome.
The best technique is the technique that resonates, I think, most strongly right. for them. That's They're true. All effective. They're all.
What was that guy's name, Greg?
Greg Braden, Braden. And it's Greg with 2 G's, Gregg. 3-minute cure. It'll blow your mind.
I never heard of that.
Oh, it'll blow your mind. And Bruce Lipton is another one. Yeah, just pioneers in this field.
Yes, ma'am.
The other interesting thing that I am researching right now is David Hawkins' work. He's a physician. And a psychotherapist, so he must be a psychiatrist. He's passed away over the past, like, about 8 years ago. Anyways, he basically, and he has a book called Healing and Recovery. Mm. He basically says all dis-ease is from unresolved guilt issues of our past. That we keep rehashing on a subconscious level because we're beating ourselves up. So all issues based on that statement, if you add dealing with guilt and forgiveness of self and others and appreciation of self and others, as we've learned gratitude and recovery works, And that's what actually I used the 12-step program, some self-hypnosis about 4 years ago when I was diagnosed with ovarian cancer. They went in surgically to get rid of it and it disappeared. It turned into endometriosis. And they were just doing end stage palliative stuff. I was not going to do the chemo. But I basically used the 12-step program on top of some hypnosis and visualization. Now, the other thing is Carl Simonton, a physician, had a center down in Louisiana, and they sent all their end stage cancer patients to him. He gave them all questionnaires at the beginning, and then he did three things with them all. He changed their diets, right? He gave them all visualizations daily, and they all had group therapy daily. And about half of them, this is Carl Simonton, Living Free Again. About half of them recovered or got considerably better and outlived their medical diagnosis. The other half still died. And the only difference was that questionnaire, which basically asked these people, do you want to live or not? Life's hard. About 50% of those people just didn't want to live. Mm. Well, and it's a process. It's a human condition.
Yeah, absolutely.
But as hypnotists, we're going to be getting the majority who want to live. So I think visualization as well as diet is a huge component. Now, I know you've done addiction work, Will, and I think that something has to replace the group therapy. I forgot who it was, the circle process or the power of eight. Who was that? She did work on the field. Anyways, there's something spontaneously healing about the circle therapy or 12-step programs where we share our own experience, strength, and hope without judgment. So I was just thinking about bringing clients back in for different groups, support groups, but I'm still, you know, organizing that. Any thought?
And part of the thought process behind the 12-step program is actually seeing people who've recovered. Most of us, especially if you come from an addiction world, you've never seen anybody recover. You know, your uncle died of it. Everybody's, you know, dad's in prison, you know, the greatest hits people have. And then they start going to meetings. This guy's been sober. That lady got sober. And then, you know, and again, that's one of the slams on some of the medical treatments. They never point out the people that get better. They'll call it a one-off, a spontaneous remission. Doesn't happen too often, you know, like what's his name? Billy, the one that wrote the book we're reading, the anti-aging book.
You're talking about Sinclair.
Sinclair, that he kind of points out, it's like we should be studying the spontaneous remissions, not the other way around.
This right? is a lifespan.
Lifespan.
I couldn't. Oh, lifespan. About. Yeah.
Yeah, and in later in the book, I'm listening. I list the audio, and he points out like yeah. And so does Bruce Lipton always talk about we should be studying the spontaneous remissions, right? Because remember when, those of us old enough to remember when Dr. Cousins had the spontaneous remission from cancer, because all he did is say, well, I remember, I actually heard him talk once, and he goes, fuck, I'm going to die. I'm just going to sit here and watch comedy half the time and go out and have a few laughs. And, you know, he'd drink some wine, watch. His big thing was the Three Stooges, right? And the Marx Brothers, because this is back in the early 70s. You got to remember, it's probably not as easy to watch all this. But anyway, and of course, then he had the spontaneous remission. And I remember him talking in the talk when he went back to the medical community, of which he was a part. They didn't want anything to do with it. Well, it's just nobody's there. And he's like, why don't we do it? You know, put people, you know, do the whole control study thing. And, you know, but not to sound cynical, but I will put it on tape. Merrick doesn't make any money from that. You know, Bayer doesn't get a cut. You know, if they could, they would. Yes, Billy.
Hearing you talk about Dr. Cousins there, and then Dr. Lori talking about her own experience here with cancer brings to mind is that the Krabiazin story that's in that's recounted, I think as in Heartland's medical and dental hypnosis. I think it starts out with they had a patient that had very large tumors. Some of them were more than golf ball size, the way they described it. And I got the impression that this guy had several tumors, some of them maybe as large as a baseball. And the drug company had a new cancer drug called Krabiazin that they were going to test. And they did the traditional double blind, I think it was a blind study. At that time, double blind hadn't become the gold standard. But they gave him the Krabiazin, and they actually cut the program short because nobody was responding except this one patient had a complete reabsorption of those tumors, and his beliefs were strong enough, and his physiology, it looked like that was the cause, and he recovered. The doctor wrote up what had happened with Krabiazin, published it, and the gentleman, I think, also may have been a flyer. I remember describing it. He went on back to flying planes or whatever. Someone told him that this had been published, and it sounded a lot like his case. So he went back to the doctor and said, "Is this me?" And the doctor said, "Yes, it is." Then the tumor started coming back. And they were coming back with a vengeance, again, very sizable. The doctor said, "Look, you know, you couldn't do this today," but he actually told him, said, "Yes, Krabiazin, the first formulation we gave you just didn't work. We have a new Krabiazin that we think is going to work. It's improved," you know. However it was presented to him, he was, again, told that this was the drug that was going to cure him. And I will use the trying to think, it may have been Roy Hunter in his book. He talks about BICE: belief, imagination, commitment, and expectation. The presentation was, it met all the criteria for an appropriate suggestion there, and the guy resorbed his tumors the second time. Of course, what does the doctor do? He writes it up. And what do his friends do that find out that the doctor wrote it up? This happened the first time. This is the second time. Well, we know this was you. Here he's done it again, because the improved Krabiazin, I'm trying to pronounce it properly here, was saline, which you couldn't do today, but back in the 50s. When this was apparently going down, or maybe early 60s even. But I think it's Heartland or one of the other noted medical and dental hypnotists of the end of the last century has the Krabiazin study in it in its first or second chapter. And it's, when you read it, it's much like your experience, Carolyn, and, it's remarkable what your mind can do interacting with your physiology. We see it many, many times, but this one was just reading it. You're just like, really? Are my thoughts really that powerful? How am I hurting myself today?
It's like if you could find some of the stuff by, I can't think of his first name, Krasilnik, Dr. Krasilnik, when he studied voodoo. Why do people actually freaking die? And then when they do an autopsy, other than the fact they're dead, there's nothing wrong with them. You know, they have no brain or heart activity, right? So they're dead, or they're in Congress. I got to throw that joke out there. We all know that. I'll say this, that book, Lifespan, and I listened to the whole thing, I'm listening to his thing at the end. It's great, it's brilliant. My only critique would be he downplays the mental side of it. it's just the pharmaceuticals, it's just this, it's the typical medical industrial complex line, you know. So I'm thinking, it's like, what if you take what he's saying with the chemicals that increase lifespan from studies, and you add, you know, because I know one guy wrote a thing, we should do it, we'll do a couple of these on anti-aging, because I think everybody in the group would be interested in that, just from my personal opinion. Yeah. But
Well, you're taking my business plan here.
Well, here's an idea. It's like, you know, when they look at, like, okay, they go to Okinawa and they study, why are these people so old? And then they always look at diet, diet, and then maybe pharmaceuticals and things like that. And one guy went in and said, well, first of all, you got to look at how the elderly are treated in the culture. You know, they're respected and revered, which would be a big deal. They never stop working. There's no retirement community, you know? And the guy that wrote it, I'm trying to think of his name, at the end he said, this led me to one thing. I'll never ever move to the villages and be with a bunch of old people, mm-hmm. right? But so they look at the diet, but they don't look at that. And the mental aspects of it, you know, and how much does that control? You know, yeah, you can eat, yes, Billy.
I think it harkens back to, I think it was Viktor Frankl and his book. It comes down to, do you have meaning in your life? Do you have some higher purpose that you can really apply yourself to, or even feel called to fulfill? That seemed to be essential for people to endure the unbelievable conditions that they had in the Nazi extermination camps. And I think it's borne out in those Blue Zone studies. I can't remember the guy who actually wrote the book Blue Zone. But you're talking about the people that live to advanced years, the centenarians, that they belong to a culture that has purpose and meaning for people in those advanced years. And they look to them as sources of wisdom, they're accepted, those kinds of things, just as you said. But Frankl comes to mind, and just looking at who's going to make it and who's not. And even some of the books I've read over the last decade, like the ship, the Indianapolis, I think it was about 4 days after it dropped the components of the unassembled atomic bomb, at least one of them, probably the one that went to Hiroshima, was delivered by the Indianapolis to Tinian. 4 days later, it was torpedoed. And there were about 4,000 people. Trying to think, it's at least 3,000 probably. But the number of people that survived in the water was well over 1,000, maybe 2,000. But the number that actually survived, because they had 4 days, the ship was unrecognized that it was lost. Because radio communications, the war hadn't ended, were still pretty sparse, and they missed maybe a regularly scheduled call in, but someone actually finally, I think flying, spotted them. But only a fraction, somewhere around 300 or 400 people survived. But talking to those survivors, it becomes clear that the people that really were able to endure, I mean, baking under the sun, not having anything to eat, but worse yet, not having anything to drink, just unbelievable. Most of us think 3 days is about as long as you're going to last without water. But these people were definitely committed to the purpose they felt in the war, but they also had other commitments at home. I just point that out, that Frankl pointed out in the extermination camps, but you also see it routinely, people that do these extraordinary things in times of war.
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, just like, that's why states that have life sentences without the possibility of parole, those inmates die young. states that have life sentences, but you might get paroled after 25 or 30. Some of they will hang on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just that little, and the, and also too, they're much more, if they get life without the possibility of parole, they're much more likely to kill guards, kill other inmates. You know, it's because what have they got to lose? Yeah, that's a good, okay, cool.
Yeah.
Well, and then the last thing I would say, because I know we deal with this with a lot of the stuff we deal with as hypnotists, you know, especially if people show up with some kind of chronic illness, how much of whatever it is part of their identity? And do they want to give up being, you know, having IBS or fibromyalgia or being, you know, on a negative side, you know?
I've often wondered that too, because...
You know, it's like, how will I be without this disease?
They talk fondly of it, almost.
And also, they're, you know, in the secondary gain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the I don't get to go put up with my freaking family on the holidays because I can say I'm having an attack, you know?
It's true. It's true.
You know, it's...
So that's such a good point. I actually had a client say to me, 8 sessions in, she was wheelchair bound. She was choosing to starve herself because she became so weak that her husband had to take care of her and cater to her. And she lived on a beautiful property not far from where I live and kind of out the country. And, you know, she was living a life of luxury because he catered to her every need. 8 sessions in, as she started to feel better, we were talking and she said to me, honest to God, you know what, Caroline, I just realized something. And I asked her, what is that? And she said, I don't think I want to get better. My whole life will change. What if I, you know, what if my husband realizes he doesn't need to take care of me anymore? This won't work for me. And I said, then there's no need for you to come back. You've made a very important decision and that's okay. You know, no judgment, no right or wrong. But at least you know where you stand now, and that's good. But I mean, she literally said, I don't think I want to get better. I need to stop coming.
Yeah.
She didn't want her husband to even know she was getting better. That blew my mind, because that was very early on when I was a brand new hypnotist, and I never thought I'd see anything like that.
And those of us that studied addictions could tell you, as somebody goes... Their family wants them to get clean and sober. We'll use alcohol and drugs. And they go in and they start getting clean and sober. And then they say, they don't like this.
No.
You know, this person has an opinion. They, you can't guilt rid them a lot, you know. I like mom or dad better when they were drunk. Right? Because I could guilt them into whatever I could guilt them into. We've seen that a lot.
Manipulation.
Okay, so Will... Given that history, and now it's interesting because when a client comes in, one of the first questions, do you want to get better? Do you want this to go away? And they all say yes. Now, I think that's the first step in creating what would be called a cognitive dissonance or internal conflict, because everything becomes an... What happens is there's an internal conflict that's unresolved, but that creates a dissonance, and then the next thing that comes up will be that awareness ultimately. But then the other thing with hypnosis, and I know you do this with all the NLP, is you dissociation. Okay, this is my disease is me, and then you start dissociating that disease. This is my disease. This disease, that disease, it becomes something out there. Oh, and I'm just experiencing it. I don't have it. I'm just experiencing it, and it can be transient. You know, the idea is to make it from this to that, but I think they need that awareness first. but then begin dissociating it. Now, do you wait until they want to dissociate from it if they have the awareness that there's still positive gain? You talk to Ken Guzzo, and you can switch that around simply by tapping, EFT and tapping, and it's basically about accepting yourself exactly as you are and then tapping yourself through again. But so you can switch that around for how long, I'm clueless, but. Yeah.
Well, and then we'll jump in with Albert, because I'll self-disclose. It was 11 months ago, I tore my Achilles tendon, right? On the leg that's been rebuilt, like the knee's been rebuilt like three times. It's one of my hobbies, getting my knees rebuilt. And I tore it about, I think the guy, he estimated, because by the time I got into the VA, it had been like 6 weeks. So it was, they weren't going to do surgery, but he said, it looks like you probably had about a 75-80% tear, which is not a very good thing, especially if you're an athlete, right? And when I first tore it, I thought I sprung my ankle. So I didn't do anything. I said, it'll get better. I was just hobbling around. In fact, the next week I came out with Miss Carolyn. She remembers that. I mean, my ankle was like this. I swore it was my ankle. I don't like doctors, right? Yeah. So anyway, I'm hobbling. Then after I left Carolyn, I came home for 2 days and went to Lebanon. So you got all the flights and everything. Not the brightest bulb in the package. Anyway, so finally he tells me that. So he goes, well, just, you know, and then I went back in the boot. I did everything, and it's better. But here's my story that makes me wonder about, like, all the stuff. Is it's been 11 months because I toured on October 4th. I just remember that day. In a karate class, and I think I'll change the story if I was fighting a national champ, because that sounds better than I was playing with the kids, you know, the little white belts. And but anyway, so I got this, and I still got a hitch in my giddy up. I still got a thing, you know, a limp, and the calf muscles just now starting to come back. Yeah, but the reason I'm bringing this up is right before I went to, like, Hypno Thoughts, I was on a set for an infomercial, right? And the person noticed it, that when the camera was on me and they were going action, I walked without a limp.
Oh, wow.
So when they cut, let's reset, go back to one, to use our acting terminology, I would hobble back. You know, I was doing a medical thing. So I'd take my gloves off, get reset. Okay, you know, action. I could walk over, grab the gloves, put the gloves on, do what I had to do. And I've heard that said a lot. There's a famous story of a Broadway actress whose hands were, she was like in her 70s. I forget her name, but I mean, her hands were, I'm not making fun. Her hands were really arthritic, right? And she would be in a play. She's also a singer. And as soon as she got on the stage and the lights hit her and her hands started to relax, she could go through the play. Then after the curtain call, her hands would tighten back up. And that is, and people say, is that possible? It's a really good actor is classic multiple personality.
Yep.
At that moment, you're a different person. And that person wouldn't have arthritic hands, you know? And it's also why you see some actors, and they don't really have to work at it that hard. Like Matt Damon, when he gained that 50 pounds for that part, you know, he goes, it was actually harder to gain the weight because he had to force himself to eat all this crappy food. As soon as the movie cut, as soon as they wrapped, the weight literally, like 6 months, he lost 50 pounds.
Wow.
And he was back to his, yes, he always worked out and everything, but it's, is it that strong in our heads? Like, you know, so I keep telling myself, I'm working on myself now. It's like, okay, you know, that's not who you are anymore. Stop the limp. You know, part of me wonders, am I going for the sympathy vote?
Well, Dr. Will, isn't that when you're acting, the classic case of complete dissociation from who you are as a person? Mm-hmm. You have to become someone else.
At so least in moments,
more traits
yeah.
have to go away.
Yeah. It's also why you see, I've done a lot of plays where it's a two-person play, so I'll know 60 pages of dialogue. The minute the play wraps, and we're done. You ask me next week one of the lines, I can't remember it.
Sure.
You know? So anyways, what do you think, Dr. B?
Well, that's very interesting because I've seen, you know, so many method actors really even sometimes injure themselves for a role. Just to to make that limp a real one, not just a, like they're acting. I mean, that's taken, I don't know. I mean, it may be, in my opinion, it may be taken too far, but yeah, I've seen actors all the time gain 50, 60, 70 pounds for a role. And they say that's a lot harder than taking it off.
Yeah, Stallone said that when he got fat for whatever the movie where he played. He was actually very good in it. He played a cop, and he gained like 65 pounds. And I forget that. Oh, he was actually very good in it. And De Niro, all these big stars were in it, and he was very good. But he said the hardest part was eating the junk food and not working out. Because that character would never, you know, he's always eating donuts and, you know, not working out. But as soon as the movie wrapped, the weight started to fall off. So, yeah. Have you worked with any fibromyalgia or IBS kind of stuff, Albert?
No, but I've seen a lot of the secondary gain things, though, with, we'll tell one story. This is more on a more emotional issue. When I was, you know, maybe like a little over 10 years ago, I saw a meetup group for people with depression. And I thought, well, I'll go volunteer my time. And it was like, you know, a group of 20 people. And we met at a diner. And the one thing I noticed was that nobody was really interested in talking about getting better. They wanted to sit and talk about how their depression was ruining their lives. But the moment I mentioned something about, well, why don't you try this? It was like, I got shut down. So, and I also heard a lot of other practitioners say that sometimes a lot of pain patients don't, or people with chronic illnesses don't want to get better because of the sympathy and the secondary gain that they're getting, or just because it's their identity.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. Sympathy.
Walk into that identity. That
sympathy, which is between shit and syphilis in the dictionary. Yeah. So. Yeah. All right. What about you, Miss Pam? The other Jersey girl. Jersey. Uptown girl. I don't know the law. I don't know the lyrics. So.
Hi.
Hey.
I don't have any experience with fibromyalgia. But I have worked with cancer, and I agree with so much of what everybody has been saying. Carolyn, you gave a lot of really great ideas, and also Michelle, a lot of the things that I've used. I had one woman who was, and also you mentioned some of my favorite, some of my favorite people that I do use some of their techniques, Dr. Bruce Lipton and Greg Braden, and someone had mentioned the field, that's Lynn McTaggart. I'm a big fan of hers. And just so many of those people. Anyway, and Carl Simonton in terms of the imagery and the visualization, and also Bernie Siegel. I studied with Dr. Bernie Siegel. He wrote Love, Medicine, and Miracles in terms of cancer. And I had this one client who she was a teacher, and she was referred to me by a doctor for insomnia. And actually what her problem was that was causing the insomnia was that her husband had an affair and left her. And actually she ended up with a venereal disease that caused her to come down with cervical cancer. And the cancer literally was eating her up. And in addition to working on, just like everyone else was talking about, and working on the insomnia, but what she would do is go at night and go and lay in her bed all night long, really fuming about her husband and how she was wronged, and he left her with this cancer, and he's with this other woman, and she had so much anger that that's something that I had to really work with her in terms of doing a lot of forgiveness work. We turned her bedroom into a sanctuary instead of a place where she would go and rage. You know, we worked on making it a beautiful place, and we worked on different rituals that she could do for nurturing herself and healing herself. Did a lot of imagery work with her in terms of really strengthening her immune system, having her work with the white blood cells and really strengthening the immune system. We worked on really reframing her life. And instead of really fuming and raging over what had been done to her, we kind of gave, you know, we worked together for goals. She went back to school during that time. She was a teacher. She went back to get her master's. We did a lot of forgiveness work. Dr. Bernie Siegel also talks about that as well, in terms of love, medicine, and miracles. A lot to do. We did a lot of nurture, you know, I did a lot of nurturing and visualization and hypnosis and really reframing her life. We, you know, people on this call talked about purpose. We really did focus on a purpose for her life, and she really did beautifully. Her cancer went into remission. Some of the tools that I had given her, she had two daughters that were also very hurt by what the husband had done. And some of the things I taught her, she was teaching her daughters, and they were doing well as a consequence of her, you know, helping them. So I agree with so much of what everybody was saying. I do EFT. I do energy work. There was another gentleman that I had worked with. He was actually not a client, but you had mentioned IBS, Will. Anyway, it was one of my teachers. I was one of my metaphysical teachers. I was at one of her workshops, and her boyfriend was there, and she wanted me to see what was wrong with him. They didn't tell me anything about what was going on with him. And so I did a body scan, and I saw that there was something going on with his colon. And I just felt that it was colitis. And so I did some hands-on healing, some energy work with him. And all of a sudden, I thought that I hurt him because he grabbed his stomach and he goes, ooh, ooh. And then, so he said he felt a little better. And then I didn't see him for a period of months. My teacher had told me that he had colitis, you know, and I wasn't told what he had, but she said he had colitis and he used to get frequent attacks. And after I had done the energy work with him, she said he you know, in that 6 month period, he didn't have any other attacks again. You know, he was doing well. So I do incorporate energy work. I do also sometimes, depending on the person, I do incorporate spirituality as well. I kind of take a transpersonal approach too. If they really believe that, I will also bring in that spiritual part. If they believe in angels, I'll work with that. If they believe in their guides or whatever their belief system is, sometimes I'll take a transpersonal approach and bring that in as well. Again, I haven't, you know, I'll bring in the energy work, I'll bring in visualization, hypnosis, EFT, affirmations, whatever I think is really gonna resonate with them. And I do pray before I work with the client, and whatever is given to me in terms of what I feel is going to resonate with them and it's going to benefit them, I'll bring that in. So I really do take kind of a holistic approach, even with the cancer patients. Dr. Joseph Issels in Germany, he has a lot of success, but he works, the first thing he does is he works with detoxification. he'll work with if they have, he does also work with visualization, by the way, but the first thing he'll do is if they have mercury in their mouth, he'll detoxify them. And then he does an interesting thing. He brings in the cavalry. he'll measure their immune system. He'll measure their white blood cells before he does the imagery. And then he'll bring in the cavalry and he'll have the music blasting away like dun 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 and as loud as he could. And then he'll have them see the cavalry coming in and killing off the cancer cells. And then afterwards, he'll take a measurement and he'll see actually the effect that visualization that he gives them with the cavalry, he'll actually see a response where the white blood cell count goes up and he, and they're actually having the benefit. It's almost like an immediate change from the visualization that he's doing. So I do believe in detoxing too as well, in terms of, some of the work that I'm doing too. But anyway, and also a number of people had mentioned stress management, that is like a given for most things for me, but especially with cancer or colitis or any of those types of things. So anyway, that's kind of some of the things I do.
All right. Cool.
Hey, Will.
Yes.
Pam just mentioned bringing in the spiritual aspect. And again, reading this book, Healing and Recovery. And as you know, a big component of that is, of course, we believe in a power greater than ourselves. Now, in what Dave Hawkins does is he says it's our total consciousness. It's our super consciousness, unconsciousness, subconsciousness that we're tapping into when we do the ideomotor stuff. So the question is can, if a person is totally atheistic, can you still show the person, allow them to keep the atheist belief, but use the ideomotor stuff? And this is based on also everyone, your experience, to tap into the truth of their system, mm-hmm. and their higher consciousness, which is, of course, spiritual, whether they know it or not, and to become more aware that way over time.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I don't see why not.
Cool. Good, Doctor. Hearing you talk about that, and I think it was Carolyn mentioned how meditation or mindfulness, there's several types of meditation. I have to be careful. I've looked at a few of them and all horses are not the same. They have different personalities and go to different places sometimes. But hearing you talk about the spiritual nature, that component of you, but not calling it that, there's a Zen monk. Actually, there's a Ren. I think they call Renzi in Zen, and that's Rinpoche, in meaning dear one in the Tibetan lineages. But I think they call him a Renzi. But his work is called Big Mind, and it really gets down to dialectical therapy. I've actually sat through an hour and a half session, and he sells DVDs of some of his sessions, but they call different aspects of yourself out, of your core being. Mm-hmm. It's a lot, in some ways it's a waking way of doing what you might deal with parts therapy, if some of you are being hypnotists or aware of parts. But that might be something that you can take as a waking way and address that spiritual component. I just mentioned it. I've looked at his work. I haven't followed it. I don't know whether he has any retreats anymore. He's probably not having retreats now, but he was very active over the last decade. He had some health issues 2 or 3 years ago, and everything sort of dropped off because they used to send me emails after I had one of the sessions when they were here in D.C. But it's a very powerful experience sitting there, and as he talks to you, and then I want to talk to you about, you know, courage, and, or, you know, bring courage forward. Let's talk about, yeah. So it's really a very impactful, and after you pick everything up at the end and walk out, you feel like you're integrated in a new way.
Cool.
How beautiful.
All right.
That's cool. Yeah.
Cool. All right. I like today. I thought it was good.
Yeah.
And I do know this is one of those topics. There's my off system remark. Sometimes, like, we'll go to conferences and there'll be a lot of really cool seminars on certain topics like fibromyalgia or IBS. And then when I really start talking to a lot of people, they haven't had that many clients with fibromyalgia, you know, because some of it, the medical model kind of cuts us off at the knees, you know. Ah, do you want to go through all that? Here, take this. You know, because I do have people call when I used to do pain control. And I say, okay, I'd like to do a little, probably be 4 to 6 sessions. Nah, I'll just go get a pill. You know, and, you know, that I don't have my office like I used to, but I did hear from some people with the offices is it started picking up for pain control with the opioid epidemic, because then it became obvious you may not want to go down this rabbit hole, and it became harder to get pain pills. You know, you had to go to your regular here in Florida, have to go to your regular doctor, and then you got to be prescribed to a pain doctor. Regular docs don't give pain pills, you know, unless you're an oncologist or something like, or a surgeon. You know, most of your primary care, nope, you got to go to the pain clinic, you know, and anyway, all right. Thank you all. Next week, let's talk about beliefs.
Ooh, yeah.
Power of beliefs. And how you implement that and what it, again, this is more of a group setting for quite a while. I want other people's feedback. Cool.
And Dr. Will has a new class.
Oh yeah, I should mention, see, I got to work on my marketing. Yes, I'm going to be doing a waking hypnosis class. It starts, it'll be going out the next day or so, September 29th. It's going to be 2 days a week, Tuesdays and Saturdays, Tuesdays at noon, Saturday at 1:30 after our little success Saturday thing. And it's on waking hypnosis. So that'll be going out soon. And I finally put it together because the guy from that Hypno Summit said, you got to offer some kind of class. So it made me sit here for 4 hours and put together at least the marketing side, right? So first I do the marketing, then I'll do the class. But so, all right. So we'll see you, some of you on Saturday, I think, hopefully. Yep. All right. Talk to you soon. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thanks again.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.